time to join the American family Robinson again in Centerville. Dick Collins is still in jail, but elsewhere in Centerville, things are moving rapidly. Mr. Lemuel B. Flotsam, the legal genius who settled mysterious Collins' estate in Ireland, declared that one G. Collins Olson, better known to you as just plain Gus, was the principal beneficiary of the vast Collins estate. It seems that Gus has been a Collins right along, although he's hidden that fact. In his own words, his mother was a Collins. Lawyer Flotsam has definitely announced that Gus is to receive the sum of $2,812,309.04. Gus was soon interviewed by young Bob Robinson on how it feels to be a millionaire. Today's program opens in the anteroom just outside Editor Luke's office. Bob is reading over with great satisfaction his own signed story about Gus and Letitia, his bride-to-be. Gus is standing by, nervously peering over his shoulder.
Well, you certainly got to admit that's a wonderful story, Gus. Just listen to this. The opulent Mr. Olson, familiarly known as Gus, wrapped his arms around his fiancée's shoulder and gazed vibrantly into her eyes. Boy, that's literature, Gus. Why, you could almost have read that in a book.
I did read it in a book. Of course, the names was different.
Yes, sir, I tell you, that story is a milestone in American journalism.
Yeah, but that don't help me out none in my present predicament.
What have you got to kick about? You're rich, you're engaged to marry a beautiful, well, at least an awfully nice girl, and...
That's the trouble. Nobody understands.
Understands what?
The people. All these people that read this literature or newspaper story of yours about me being a millionaire.
Well, what's the matter? Don't you want people to know you're rich? Oh, I know what's the matter. You want to take all your dough and go live in a cave like Peter the Hermit, just dribbling gold pieces through your fingers.
Well, that might be better than trying to handle some of these pests that has been on my neck ever since your story come out. It's terrible. They all got something to sell. And those that ain't selling something want me to kick in for this and kick in for that. One minute it's a home for old St. Bernard dogs, and the next minute it's something else. A guy stopped me on the street this morning and wanted me to finance a rocket to the moon.
Well, that might be a good idea. You could get away for a while and commune with nature.
Gee, I even had to go out the back window of my boarding house this morning. Oh, they got me spotted. Here comes a mob of them now. They must have followed me up here.
Holy smoke, Gus. Look at them pushing.
You done it. You gotta help me out.
Oh, all right. I'll handle them for you. I'll be your personal representative. Now beat it out the side door and go down the fire escape.
Okay. If there's something that really needs my attention, I'll be down in the pointer's room.
Okay, only hurry up. They're coming fast.
Tell them I'm in my private office. You know, the boss is all...
Yeah. Just a minute. One at a time, please. Form a line on the right there. Women and children first. Now, madam, you're first. I'm Mr. Olson's personal representative. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm here on very urgent business, young man. I must see Mr. Olson personally.
Mr. Olson's very busy, madam. I'm his manager. You can confide in me.
I like that. Oh, is that his office over there, the one marked private?
That? Yes. No.
I see.
Yes, madam. You can trust me implicitly. What was it?
Never mind. I'll come back later.
One at a time. All right. Don't crowd. Hey, lady, come back here. You can't go in there. Hey!
Oh, excuse me, but I'm sure you wouldn't mind giving a few minutes just to little me.
What's that?
You see, I'm the secretary of the Get Acquainted with Shakespeare Club of Centerville.
And, yeah.
Well, we have a simply darling site picked out for our new clubhouse, and we just know you'd love to contribute with all your millions.
With what?
Why, surely you feel some responsibility about the cultural life of this community.
Did I hear you say something about my millions?
But of course. Oh, my dear, it's such a thrill meeting a real millionaire. You've no idea.
Huh?
And I can tell just by looking at you, you have the soul of a philanthropist.
Well, no, wait. There seems to be some mistake here. Just who do you think I am?
Why, Mr. Olson. The great Mr. Olson. The Mr. Olson.
Well, madam, you're mistaken. I'm only Luke Robinson, editor of the Centerville Herald. And if I could scrape up $1,000, I'd count myself lucky.
Oh, but the young man said...
And while I may have the soul of a philanthropist, my pocketbook forbids any indulgence in that direction.
Yes, definitely. There must be a mistake. So sorry, so terribly sorry.
Well, I'm sorry, too. I'd like to be a millionaire.
Well, all I can say is the young man outside told me this was Mr. Olson's office.
He did he? Well, we'll see about that. Good day, madam.
Hello,
Bob! Bob, may I speak to you a minute?
Gee, I'm sorry, Dad. She got past me, that's all. And I thought she was a lady.
Say, what's going on out here?
Well, you see, Dad, all these people are chasing Gus around on account of trying to sell something, or they need money, and they read about him in the paper. My story, you know.
Yes, yes, I know.
Oh, it's really terrible, Dad. Why, Gus is leading the life of a hunted thing. He's hiding out in the furnace room now.
I'm afraid it's too much of a luxury having a millionaire around a busy newspaper office. You tell Gus I want to see him.
Oh, gee, Dad, I can't get away. I've got to keep this crowd in order. They'll be all over the place.
Well, never mind. I'll get him on the phone, and don't let any more of that bunch in here.
I'm sorry, sir. Mr. Olson can't see anybody. He just left for China. He doesn't expect to be back. I'm sorry you can't see him.
There he is.
Help!
Hey, wait a minute.
Get off my neck. Bob! Hey, Bob, where are you, Bob?
Gangway, please let him through. Is there a doctor in the house? Oh, gosh. Gus, run for it.
Hey, jump and Jiminy.
The life of a millionaire seems to be a bit strenuous, Gus. Appears to have something in common with football and rioting.
Jay, boss, I'm going down for the toy time.
Well, I sympathize deeply, but it's a little difficult for me to, trying to get out of paper with this mob of panhandlers hanging around.
I realize that, boss, but what can I do?
Now, I don't want to seem harsh, Gus, but I feel impelled to suggest that, well, for the time being anyway, now that you're a millionaire and don't really need the job, you might take a leave of absence from the paper and sort of take care of your estate.
Oh, gee, boss, I felt so safe here. And I'm scared to make any changes.
Oh, you'll be all right after you get married and settled down and get used to your new way of living.
But that's what scares me, boss, getting married.
Oh, that's nonsense, Gus. You've got to accustom yourself to changes and improvements, or else you'll never get anywhere. Anyway, if you don't mind my being philosophical for a moment, I'd like to point out that everything changes. Nothing ever remains the same for very long.
Yeah, boss, but it's so comfortable down there in that finest room, playing pinochle with the boys day after day.
Yeah?
Gee, boss, what else do I want? A man can only eat 3 meals a day and wear 1 pair of pants at a time. What's the use of worrying about anything else?
Gus, if our forefathers figured that way, where would our country be today? Just about where it started. Yes, sir, Gus. The world moves, and we have to move with it or get lost in the shuffle. Let me cite a little imaginary conversation I had this morning with my grandfather to show that things in this country and under our system usually work out for the better.
Your grandfather, he's dead, ain't he?
Yes, he is. But remember, this was an imaginary conversation. And now, as you know, my morning drive to the office is a long one and permits plenty of time for thought. Well, this morning, as I drove along the broad, smooth road, half listening to the radio, playing some fine orchestral music, I wondered what my grandfather would think of our modern world.
I don't get it, boss.
Well, just hold on, you will. Now, as I drove along this morning, I fancied that my grandfather had had breakfast with me, and I had asked him if he wanted to drive downtown with me to see what changes had taken place since he had died 38 years ago. And he said he would, and drove with me.
How could he, boss, if he was dead?
Gus, haven't you got any imagination? I said this was an imaginary ride.
It makes me feel kind of creepy.
Well, it needn't, because it's going to deal with very practical matters and something that concerns you, if you'll listen.
Okay, boss.
Well, we were driving along, and naturally I spent some time explaining the mechanics of automobiles to him. In fact, about all he could talk about was the marvelous contraption that he was riding in. How much does one of these things cost? The old gentleman inquired. Well, a good new one costs about $600. But you can pay much more if you want to, I told him. $600, he exclaimed. Why, we have passed thousands of them. Where did all these people get $600 to pay for an automobile? In my day, that was 2 years' pay for a first-class carpenter.
Sure, everybody has a car now. Almost everybody.
Well, I explained to my grandfather that every car he saw cost at least that much when it was new, but that a present owner paid less if he had bought it secondhand. I told him that 20 years ago, one could not buy a car as good as the cheapest car today at any price. That cars which were much inferior at that time cost several $1,000s. I told him how new machinery and mass production had brought costs down and quality up, and that at the same time, wages had gone up, so so that the average employee at the Herald, for instance, could buy 2 cars a year if he wanted to be so foolish as to spend his money that way.
Yeah, boss, I guess that's true. But how about me and my future? What's the connection?
Just this, Gus. The people who stand still never get anywhere. The happiest people are those who are always doing something, making new plans, and getting somewhere. The improvements that amazed my grandfather were made possible by inventors, businessmen, manufacturers who were willing to take a chance, men who were not willing just to sit still and watch the world go by. And you, in a manner of speaking, can do the same thing. There's just as much room for improvement in the world as there ever was. Television, universal air conditioning, streamlining, glass houses, greater safety for air travel, hundreds of other fields offer untold possibilities.
Yeah, but what can I do?
Well, you can quit being a furnace room loafer on the Herald and see how you can use your money where it'll do the most good. And that means investing it in sound business ventures. Make a decision. Get out of your rut.
That's all right, boss. Progress and improvements is a good thing, but marriage with Letitia is something else again.
Nonsense, Gus.
No, I don't know whether marrying her would be an improvement or not. She's a great little woman, but she's got a mind of her own.
Well, marriage would be an improvement if you made it so. Be firm after your marriage. Establish the fact that you're the boss. Now, don't shilly-shally. And above all, don't relinquish control of the household. Come in.
Oh, there you are, Gus. How do, Mr. Robinson?
How do you do, Letitia?
Sorry, I can't stay long, but I just come up to tell Gus that we're getting married 2 weeks from today. I've made all the arrangements.
Well, that's splendid.
Yeah, everything all arranged. Going to be a big church wedding with my cousin. He's that preacher from Fargo, North Dakota.
Oh, yes, yes, I met
him. Well, he's coming down to officiate. Well, come on, Gus. Don't stand there moping and looking so darn sheepish. Now, you come right along with me, but there's plenty of things I want you to do. Well, goodbye, Mr. Robinson.
Yes, ma'am, Letitia. Well, so long, boss. I guess I gotta be going.
Goodbye. Don't forget what I told you, Gus.
Apes. Gus, you two Letitias, follow right behind me. We'll push our way through to the freight elevator. Then they can't get you.
I don't want to buttonhole you, Mr. Olson, but I want to...
Young
see
man,
you, Mr. Olson.
He's been buttonholed permanently.
You know how it is, buddy.
Gangway. Mr. Olson's on his way to China. He can't see anybody. Here you are, Gus and Letitia. Freight elevator's waiting right here for you. Take him down, Joe. Phew, I guess that's all.
Pardon me, young man. Could I see you for a minute?
Mr. Olson's on his way to China and he can't see anybody.
Bob, don't you recognize me?
Recognize who?
Oh, well, I forgot the beard. Wait till I take it off.
Uncle Windy!
Hush, my boy. Bob, let's go somewhere we can talk.
Sure, we can go in the circulation department. Here, they're all out to lunch.
Good, it's quiet in here. Bob, I've just read a copy of this paper announcing Gus Olson's windfall and his engagement.
Sure, you see who wrote it?
Now, what does this mean, Bob?
It's all true.
Oh, dear, this is an unforeseen development. It's going to be difficult to get in on any of that money with Gus feeling the way he does towards me.
I'll say.
Yes, especially difficult. Now that Gus appears to have taken Letitia away from me, or at least this money has done the trick. I wonder... Bob, I think I've just had an idea. Let's see now. Letitia, Gus, By Jove, I've got it. Alienation of affections. I'll sue Gus.
It's too late, Uncle Windy. She's already suing you for breach of promise.
Oh, dear, that complicates things. But it doesn't stop me. No, sir. There's a way. There must be a way. Bob, my good fellow, slip out and get me a tuna sandwich, will you, while I think.
Old Windy Bill. He's like a fire horse. He smells money from afar and comes charging up. I wonder what he's up to now. Well, listen to our next program and find out. Until then, goodbye. The American Family Robinson, which is broadcast regularly over this station, is written by Douglas Silver and Marjorie Bartlett and produced by the National Industrial Council.